iPad app detects concussions. Man wakes up after being declared dead. Improving the cardiac arrest chain of survival in the UK. And we're going to visit with good friend Jerry Barrett from Australia in part one of a segment on EMS in Africa. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's right here on this week's episode of the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the MedicCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the PodMedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this week's show. As usual, I have a great show for you this week. We're going to take a look at several news items, including a brand new iPad app that can detect concussions in student athletes. Very cool. Then we're going to continue after the news into a segment with Jerry Barrett. He's a paramedic in Australia who went to Africa to educate people there about EMS practice in their communities. We'll have part one of that segment coming up this week in our tip of the week. Now, all of that's coming up next here on the MedicCast, so stay tuned. Plus, you need to remember a couple of things before we get to that, so let's get right into that. Please make sure you check out the additional links and information available for you over at the MedicCast blog. You can find that over at MedicCast.com/blog. You'll look there and you'll find a show notes link right at the top of the page. Just click that link and it'll take you right to our most recent episode. And while you're there, you can scroll down and find any previous episode as well. So if you're looking for something in particular from a past show, you can find it. Don't forget, there's also a search box in the upper right-hand corner of the page on the site. So if you're looking for something in particular, you can enter some keywords there. But whatever the case may be, take some time and make sure you follow up on the information in the show and understand how it applies to your own EMS practice, your instructors, and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. I love hearing from you. You can email me here at podmedic@mac.com. Just shoot me an email with your comments, your questions on the shows. Maybe you want to send me a suggestion or an interview idea for a future episode. Either way, I want to let you know that I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I will get back to you as well. So keep those emails coming. Also, remember, if you're an iPhone, an Android phone, Windows phone, or even a Windows 8 user, you can check out the brand new free MedicCast app from your device's store. Just search for MedicCast EMS app, and you can already check that out and find it over there. Also, if you already have the app, please go back and make sure you leave a comment and rate the app and be an active supporter of the MedicCast community. It helps folks decide whether the app's for them or not. Leave a comment over there and encourage them to pick it up. That's enough info. Don't forget, the ProMed Network studio will be live at EMS World Expo coming up next week. So if you're going to be there, I want to see you at the booth. Come by and make sure you say hi. I look forward to these opportunities to meet the audience from the MedicCast. You guys are awesome. And I'll get into that and talk to you and chat with you. So I hope that you'll come by and say hi in the booth. It's really important. We're going to get on to the rest of the show, but make sure you support our sponsors. Let them know you heard about them here on the MedicCast. It helps keep the show coming out for you each week and keeps the lights on here at MedicCast Studios. So take a moment and tell them thanks for supporting the show. Starting off this week's news, we're going to look at a brand new iPad app being used by trainers in football and other high school and collegiate sports to test for the presence of a concussion. This app was developed by the Cleveland Clinic and has been tested for the last several years in and around the Cleveland area in the state of Ohio. Now they are going to be testing it in other parts of the country as they strive to get this valuable and useful tool out to some rural areas that don't have all the resources they have in the Cleveland area. Rock Valley High School is in Rock City, Iowa, and it's among the first to begin using this innovative iPad app for its high school athletes. The app is called the Cleveland Clinic Concussion System, and it works this way. It uses a set of baseline tests before the season starts to record an athlete so that we know what they look like normally. Then, subsequent tests after an event or a suspected concussion can determine if there's a change in neurologic status. It provides coaches, trainers, and medical and healthcare professionals a visual score of 5 attributes that can be easily seen when changes occur between baseline and subsequent testing. This visual score makes it easy for staff and medical professionals to know when an athlete needs further testing and also, most importantly, needs to sit out from practices and games for a period of time. According to the developers, one of the best aspects of the app is that visualization aspect of it, that you can view the results, and you can actually show a coach visually exactly how a student has fallen behind and failed in one or more of the 5 criteria. The system tests a couple of things. It tests mental and visual acuity along with manual dexterity, and it even will attach to the patients directly on their waist using a belt, and it determines their gait stability and general postural stability while they're standing on both firm and soft surfaces, and it uses the iPad's internal positional sensors to do this. So you might see this soon when you're called to the scene of a suspected head injury at a local sporting event. Be prepared to let the trainer run his brief series of tests before you take this patient to the hospital. They also might be able to give you some interesting tools and evidence to lead you toward the belief that there is a concussion present with this particular patient. Next up in the news, well, it's another interesting and perhaps a little bizarre story out of Ohio. A man was declared dead recently by physicians after they determined his heart had stopped beating and he was unable to be revived. 45 minutes later, just after nurses had finished preparing his body for viewing by the family in the hospital, he began to show signs of life again. 5 days later, he woke up in the hospital and had no apparent signs of deficiency. First off, I'm glad this happens to doctors too, because I'm usually reporting about paramedics who call the patient too early. While many of this is maybe a miracle, and I guess maybe it is, there's a lesson here for all of us when we're working on patients we might otherwise presume dead. We in EMS need to give every patient a chance at survival, and that means using our skills and our tools to their fullest extent when treating patients, even in extreme situations. In this man's case, doctors presume he had some sort of viral infection affecting his heart and lowering his heart rate to the point where it was nearly undetectable. Since there was no defect upon awakening, that's what they're going with anyway. I think the lesson learned here is that we need to be sure we are very thorough in our assessments, especially of patients who are presumed dead, and that we need to take our job as lifesavers seriously when treating patients near death. I urge you to read this whole article about this patient because he's an example of what might be, maybe, if we work a little bit harder. Finally in the news this week, let's look at an article I found in medicalnewstoday.com that looks at a recent study from the UK. The British Heart Foundation recently released a report stating that numbers of people dying from cardiac arrest in the UK, in that country, were unacceptable. Now, the UK reports about 60,000 out-of-hospital cardiac arrests each year, and the save rates there are pretty much very similar to what you see here for out-of-hospital arrests. The UK report states that only by strengthening the chain of survival can we see improvement in survival rates outside of the hospital. This includes more public access AEDs, as well as increasing the number of bystanders educated to perform CPR and use those AEDs. To find out how you can do this, you might want to check out a recent Medicast TV episode I released last week that looked at a program in my community teaching hands-only CPR. You too can sponsor and hold events like this where you live, folks. People want to be part of a life-saving effort, and you're going to have no problem finding a local business or a civic organization willing to support your efforts to teach more people CPR in a public venue. So get out there, talk to professional local sports organizations about maybe holding a training during or before or after one of their games. Attend local festivals, carnivals, and fairs to do training and engage in public outreach to educate about sudden cardiac arrest, CPR, and AED use. We all know we can't do it alone. You might, however, be the one who teaches that vital individual how to do bystander CPR that gets to use it in a life-saving situation, and they might be the difference between losing a life or saving a life at your next cardiac arrest call. So think about that while you're doing these types of programs. Coming up in this week's Tip of the Week, I bring you a return visit with a good friend of the MedicCast, Jerry Barrett from Australia. I interviewed Jerry, quite a few years ago, for a show where we talked about tactical EMS. Recently, while trolling on Facebook, I noticed that Jerry was in Africa doing some EMS education there, along with some of his other educational pursuits. And I asked Jerry, when he returned home, if he'd like to come on the show and talk a little bit about some of the things he was doing and some of the things he saw while he was in Tanzania. Here's part one of that interview segment. We'll have part two coming up in next week's episode. Hi, I'm really excited to be here today with good friend Jerry Barrett from Australia. And he's been on the show in the past, but it's been quite a few years. So, Jerry, I'd like to welcome you back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie. Yeah, it's been good to be back.
So refresh everybody's memory a little bit about yourself and your background.
Hi, it's a long story, but basically I'm an army medic who's gone his way through TAC Medical School and Special Forces and Airborne, and then I've just got to see it a bit and gone back on the street and done my thing. And so, long of the tooth, I thought I'd do a bit of education and harness some more skills. Just by luck, it's I actually designed a first aid course that could be put in pictures. So I've done this picture-based first aid course for low literacy communities, and that could be anywhere in the world, really. My basic thought for the last 20 years is that if as a young boy I could pick up a tin tin. Do you have tin tin over in America?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. It's obviously in my day, back in my youth, it was actually in French. Sorry, not tin tin. Asterix the Gaul. Sorry.
Oh, Asterix. I have. I used to read those books too.
Cool. Yeah. Well, in my day, they used to be in French and not the English version. So I thought way back then, if I could pick up a copy of Asterix the Gaul and read through the pages all in French that I couldn't understand anyway, and figure out what was happening, then surely I can do that to first aid and be successful. Now, obviously, the key to this is to actually get someone who can draw, and that's not me. my stick insect characters wouldn't pass any kind of tests anyway, so I'm really fortunate that I've got a good friend who's a fantastic artist, and he's helped me along, and we've done the first module, which is basic hygiene. It's basically the chain of infection in three easy steps, and I've actually created some bugs, so cartoon bugs. So I've got the water bug, which is hepatitis A. Mm-hmm. I've got the blood bug, which is Hep B and HIV. I've got the mud bug, which is kind of Pseudomonas and a bit of E. coli. I've got the phlegm bug, which is obviously staph, and I've got the poo bug, which is E. coli. And these bugs are actually designed so they actually look like the actual bugs, only they're a kind of cartoon format. And it's just, I put them in a storyboard that basically shows where they come from, what they are, how they get into the body. And when they get into the body, they make you sick. And then I've got a picture of some soaps and them being scared of soap, and then someone washing their hands and they're all dead. And this is all picture form. And then there's a bit of a picture story where it's basically wash your hands after you prepare food and before you eat, and you know, after you go to the toilet and bits and pieces. So I was very fortunate. I've developed all this, and this is my study. But the health department sent me over to Tanzania to actually develop this ambulance system. To get back to the original story,
right?
I actually went over there, and the connection is my professor is also head of a non-for-profit agency called Global Health Alliance in WA. And there's an amalgamation of all these nursing schools in Western Australia. And they send nurses out to Tanzania and help educate, pass on their education and mentor them and precept to them and basically just spread their knowledge and assist them. And this is with quite some aid from the West Australian government as well. So it's really good, and they just stumbled across the fact that they just provided two Toyota Land Cruiser ambulances for these two communities that were probably about 75 kilometers away from the nearest hospital on unsealed road. And I just come along with this thesis, and I said, "Well, look, you know, this professor, we've just bought these two ambulances, and they're getting ready to ship out. And you know, you being a kind of fairly experienced remote paramedic, would you mind having a look at the kit list and seeing if you can make some suggestions?" So I said, "Yeah, it's great." And these ambulances were just, you know, bog standard Toyota ambulances that were geared out for any metro ambulance. And I was like, "Well, you know, this stuff, like, they won't get used, and all, you know, all the oxygen kit will basically perish, you know, plus the fact they can't get, they haven't got oxygen over there. So what's the point of having oxygen when,
right,
you know, you've got no replaceable seals, you know, you've got no resupply. So you've got to get back to basics." So I redesigned the kit list and decked it out to what I think a remote ambulance should be with the skill level of the people using it. And they said, "Oh, that's great. Now that saves us a heap of money as well, because all the stuff you've mentioned is all also a cheaper alternative. You know, things like manual suction instead of a Twinovac. You know, it's just fairly common sense stuff." And they said, "Well, as you come up with the kit list, do you want to go over there and teach them?" I was like, "Oh yeah, I'd love to. That'd be cool." So last year, I actually went over with and actually delivered these two ambulances to these two remote medical centres, and they're so grateful. And they for the whole week I spent training with them in the free time. They'd take me in the ambulance and they'd visit all these villages that had never seen a white man, let alone a white man with an ambulance before. And they were thrilled, absolutely thrilled. They were so generous. They put me up. I stayed in their community for a week, 10 days last year. And basically all the drivers got taught off four-wheel driving. And I taught all the nurses how to go from basic life support and up to upper airway management, advanced airway management, and intravenous strips. And so that was great. And I went back this year just to reinforce that training and also to conduct my research. So it's a bit of a win-win situation for me.
Excellent. Now, you know, I saw just some of your posts and some of your information you were putting out on Facebook, and that's kind of what spurred this. I love how social media is just keeps bringing us closer and closer together, because we get to see some of the things that you do. And like you said, what seems like a very generous donation of an ambulance ready to go for a metropolitan area is not necessarily the right thing for every community out there. And I'm glad you were available to really parse down what equipment was truly needed in a remote location.
Yeah, well, I put in one of my reports, I mean, basically, an ambulance is just a taxi. It's just a vehicle if the person inside it can't use the equipment. So, you look at a lot of the African healthcare systems, and it literally is. It's a vehicle with a trolley to move people from A to B. What, you know, what's the difference between that and a taxi? Well, you know, we get caught up in the same old debate in metro area when we get users taxis all the time. But at least if something goes wrong, then there's a trained paramedic in the back. My point is that you can fill the ambulance full of advanced kit and the best technology in the world and the most advanced drugs. But if the guy or the person in the back doesn't know how to use them, and he doesn't know how to use them in anger and properly and proficiently, then it's no more than an expensive van with a trolley in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've been out there on several Priority One calls. I think I actually posted a video on YouTube just recently of a clip. We did on one of my last days, we actually got called out to an even more remote dispensary. This dispensary is a place with basically run by a nurse. It's got absolutely no acute standard treatment available to it whatsoever. So this was the actual community was 54 kilometers away from us, and we were like, you know, 45 kilometers away from the big hospital, and this was in the other direction. So we went on a 54 kilometer Priority One drive off road. You know, it was sealed. The first 30 kilometers was a sealed track with, you know, dodging cows and people and crowds and buses and lorries, overloading lorries. And the last 20 kilometers was off-road. You know, the rains had washed out the road. It was just horrendous. So we get to what was potentially a self-abort major hemorrhage to a P4, I think it was a P4G3, mother who'd failed to progress. She'd been in labour for like 23 hours and she was absolutely exhausted. She was dilated to eight centimetres and had been for the last 8 hours. There was no fetal signs for the last 2 hours. And, we get there and it's what can you do? But we checked her over. I was with one of the nurses that I'd trained. So, she did all the vital signs. She did everything I taught her to do. And we moved her. We moved this young lady. And then asked the nurse to check vital signs again. And lo and behold, there was a fetal heart rate.
Wow.
So it became a salvageable patient. So we then had a 95-kilometre off-road drive, priority one, back to the hospital in Kisawari. And she then got moved on to Dar es Salaam after that. So, and I believe she gave birth to a live baby. So that in itself, without the ambulances being there, she would have had no hope.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing is coupling the appropriate training with the appropriate equipment and then getting them the transport. We're, in some of these remote areas, we're really back to the basics of where ambulance started
the wartime
when they were just at wagons to take wounded soldiers from the front back to the hospitals.
Yeah. I mean, ambulance means, to ambulate, it's to move a patient from A to B. Mm-hmm. I think it was Napoleon Bonaparte's army in the French Napoleonic Wars that actually came up with the term. And that's exactly right. I mean, these people would have no way of getting there otherwise. No way on God's earth would they be able to get to the medical aid, especially someone that sick. So it is belt and braces. There's no point teaching these people advanced techniques. It's a bit of a moral issue, but it's even debatable whether it's good teaching them CPR, because there's no defibrillator. There's no electricity. I mean, I was staying in a village with no electricity, no defibrillator, obviously.
Right.
How long did you do CPR for? We taught it, obviously, and they were very interested, and they did very well. However, at what point do you spend more time going through BLS and a CPR scenario? When you're an hour away from a hospital with no electricity, so there are kind of fairly big moral implications as well.
It seems like that's a great opportunity for somebody to come up with some kind of solar chargeable AED that can be deployed remotely anywhere.
Yeah, I think the technology available today with solar, the increase in technology as it is, I think it'd be fairly easy for one of the big companies to deploy a solar powered defibrillator. And how many lives would that save? All these communities that don't have access to defibrillators or electricity, let alone defibrillators. He's got so many practical uses, even for our armed forces, special ops and stuff like that. I mean, they're fairly heavy anyway, but certainly for the combat aid teams, then having a solar-powered defibrillator would be the next logical step.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and remind you to follow up on all of the information from this week's show over at mediccast.com/blog. When you get there, you'll find the show notes link right there at the top of the page, and you can take a moment and check out and follow up on all of that information, the links to the news items you find there, also all of the tips and additional resource links I put there. All of that's there for you as well. You can also sign up for the email newsletter while you're there. There's a little form right there on the right-hand side of the page. Just fill that out, and you can actually get all those links and things sent directly to your email inbox every week. I also welcome your comments and suggestions directly by email, so if you want to, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. You can send in your news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I look forward to hearing from you. And let me know, because I will make sure I get back in touch with you. I work hard to respond to every email that comes in, so please, please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media sites and pages, well, you can do that. You can find me most places under the handle PodMedic. So catch me over at Twitter or Facebook, twitter.com/PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic, and friend or follow me on those sites. You can also check out the Medicast on our very own Facebook page. We have over 4,000 followers there. It's growing all the time. Head over and join this growing community at facebook.com/Medicast. Click the like button at the top of the page and join the Medicast community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Medicast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the Medicast with your colleagues and students in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, tips, and more every Monday morning so you can kick off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the Medicast today and share the show with somebody you know. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors, and remember, folks, scene safety. BSI.